cliffcentral.com.
It's Nicole Scherzinger and On the Rocks. Photoshop you out this picture. That's how she rolls.
Let's have a drink. Let's have a drink.
Well, you're gonna have a drink because it's Friday. And because it's Friday, usually on a Thursday we get to speak to him, but yesterday he was otherwise busy with a whole lot of stuff, so this morning we get to catch up with Justice Malala and the Burning Platform, and we get to cover all kinds of interesting things. The replacement for Thuli Madonsela, the Auditor General's report, the lists mayhem, and even violence in KZN. All of that and more with Justice Malala right now.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
So, good morning, Justice. I hope you're well. How's your roadshow going?
I'm good. I'm good and happy. I saw you guys, Anthea, talking about the possibility of a downgrade. So I'm bigging myself up in my heart that we mustn't be downgraded. We mustn't be downgraded. So, you know, today I'm keeping a positive mood. How are you guys?
Well, you know what they say. You gotta hope for the best but prepare for the worst.
That's what people like me tell people who ask me for advice. But, you know, sometimes I just don't even want to prepare for the worst. I'm just gonna keep hope and forget the rest.
All right, so let's begin. I don't know if you want to start in KZN because there's something quite dramatic that's happened. Three leaders have been killed in 48 hours this week in the ANC and KZN. What's going on there?
There's been a low level war, if you will, going on in this province. There's a war inside the ANC. There's a war inside the tripartite alliance, and then there's a war for positions. Over the months, over the past year, there's been quite a few incidents of branch leaders, branch secretaries, SACP-linked leaders being shot and killed. It's a feature, it's a development that reminds me of KZN in the 1980s and 1990s, when at that time ANC leaders were being killed off. You'd be in a village in Bryanston, where you guys are right now. That village would be divided between ANC and IFP, and there'd be some members of your family who are IFP and some members who are ANC. And you'd find extraordinary things happening, like members of the same family at war with each other on different sides of the divide, and suddenly fighting. And so now, the ANC has largely consolidated its power in KZN, its master and commander. But what's happened is that the ANC and the SACP have been at loggerheads on issues of corruption and so forth and so forth. And you've seen people basically beginning to be killed off. It's just sort of over the past few months really become a big, big issue in this province. And so what happened this week, you saw just on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, people just dying off, just people being killed off in the province. All of them branch leaders. The ANC is in shock here. I met some ANC people yesterday, and I said, "Guys, what's going on? This sounds like war." Mm-hmm. And basically it is war, but no one seems to know exactly when exactly how, who is fighting who and why, but it's internal ANC politics that seems to have gone terribly poisonous in the past few months, particularly with the run-up to the election.
Justice.
A bigger thing that has more meaning here is the fact that the provincial leadership is divided. There are people who are, how shall I put it, who are supporters of Peter Zigalala. Peter Zigalala is a big supporter of President Zuma. Mm-hmm. He's now the chair of the ANC here. Yeah? And then there are people who support Senzo Mthuli, who is the senior who was kicked out 2 weeks ago. And those divisions are what's coming up. I also want to say it's very nasty what's happening. If you think about it, the first person who died on Tuesday, a man called Simo Mngwabe, he resigned sort of suddenly as the chief financial officer of Moi Mbofana municipality. He was taking his kids to school, right? Mm-hmm. And he gets shot and killed in Pietermaritzburg in Eden Bay. That is an area that was well known for political killings in KwaZulu-Natal in the 1980s and early 90s. Another ANC leader, a branch chairman, was killed also in Pietermaritzburg on Wednesday afternoon after he left the meeting. So he went to an ANC meeting and then boom, he was killed. So you know, there is something going on in this province that I think we should be standing up and asking what's going on. If you think about the guy who was killed after leaving the punch meeting, the ANC punch meeting, he was shot more than 10 times. Clearly, he was targeted, and there is, yeah.
What do the police do when they hear about this? Is there any attempt to arrest people to investigate this, or does it just get written off?
This is the interesting part. The police keep on saying we are investigating, we're getting to the bottom of it. But no one has been arrested for any of these killings. They happen, and no one gets arrested. It's just boom. Keep going. Life goes on as usual. So this, for me, is another aspect of it, that where are the police, where are the people who should be arresting the perpetrators? They are not there. And it's cause for huge concern. It's cause for massive, massive concern when that happens, when essentially no one is being arrested, no one is being found to... If you think about the guy who was taking his school, that's traumatized, and if the perpetrators are not found, they are scared, and they will never see justice. Those kids are scarred for life, but the community is scarred for life, knowing that you can do that sort of thing and get away with it. Given that there have been so many of these killings, and you know the number is not really tabulated properly, so I can't give you a number that says over the past year there's been 24 killings, but there have been many, and they keep on coming up again and again. About 4 months ago, 3 months ago, there was a weekend when 3 SA Communist Party leaders were killed in the same weekend at funerals of those who had been killed and so forth. So there is something here, and I'm amazed that political leaders, the police, rightly as you ask, I don't seem to be taking any steps to say, stop it now. We need this to come to an end.
It's terrifying that this kind of thing can happen in a democracy, an open, free society like ours in the 21st yeah. century. It's just outrageous that you can have mafia-style hits being taken out on on civilians. These are members of civil society. It's outrageous.
But, you know, I mean, I don't know what we are saying about this democracy. If you look at the reports of the cash for post scandal that the Ministry of Education has been on about, here in this province, there have been school principals killed because they accepted a job at the school from the department, but allegedly did not want them in that position, or people aligned to the union didn't want them in that position, and the allegations are that they got killed off. Now, when you are a school principal and you get killed because, no, you're not the right guy for the position, a union member was supposed to get the position, it becomes pretty depressing what the culture of violence is all about, particularly in this province. So, you know, this is massively concerning. It's not just the ANC, SACP, ANC internal fighting. It's also the alliance partners, the trade unions that are deep in that kind of fighting. I think it's a warning signal to the ANC leadership here that something is not right, and they need to fix it.
Yeah, something's out of control. It's like taxi warfare. In fact,
taxi. It's exactly that. Mm-hmm. It has elements of it when you have people just essentially snipered off like that.
Well, it's interesting. Avi, who listens to us from New York, said, just like the taxi bus murders, there was another bus shot on Tuesday in Soweto. It's obviously other buses, but these cases are never resolved.
No, I mean, that's another, you know, I'm interested in the minor debate going on about, oh, you know, if you burn infrastructure and so forth, you will get a 30-year sentence and so forth. And that's good and well, but think about it. Is deterrent the fact that there's a big sentence or that you will be caught? And so for me, the big thing is, if we're not catching the people who are responsible for these three murders, for these bus shootings, for these other outrages and so forth, then you can say, oh, it will be 30 years that you're going to get. But if you're never going to be found and arrested, that's a meaningless number. And so, you know, we need to make up our minds about, are we going to catch the criminals, or are we just making noises about, oh, you know, we have a big sentence and we're going to show these people. Nothing's going to happen. You need a police service that will investigate and find the perpetrator. That's the key.
All right, moving further afield, we've got a couple of urgent things we need to address. First of all, the Auditor General has made a report, and we need to find a replacement for Thuli Madonsela. How's that going in both of those?
I mean, both are linked. I find it interesting. So basically, how shall I put it? Basically, you know, Thuli Madonsela, and we touched on this last week, but the process has started now. We know who the chair of the committee that's going to lead the process to appoint her will be. Her name is Dr. Makosi Khoza. She's from NKZN. Mm-hmm. She is a widely respected MP. The opposition has seats on the committee. Julius Malema is one of the committee members. Linus Breitenbach from the DA, another member, and it's 11 MPs who are going to make the determination about who the next person is. And so I think, you know, South Africans can't fold their arms and say we didn't know, or who's this person who's been selected and so forth. I really think a lot of us sit back and say, oh, you know, I don't know what to do. What's my role in society? I think this is a chance for South Africans to really agitate for a person that is respected across the board, not just by certain political parties. I think it's a chance for people to really become activists about who the next public protector is. So I put that on the diary for us to talk about, because I want to remind people, go onto the Corruption Watch website. That NGO has started a process to open up this conversation to make sure that people are not elected in parliament and their names go to President Zuma and you don't know. We can know and we can influence that process. So I'm very keen for people to get on with it and do what they can to support, to show that there are many, many amazing people who can replace the public protector. I hope that will happen. Kimi Makweti and the Auditor General's report. I just want to say, you know, for me, it's been interesting that more municipalities are seemingly receiving clean audits. That means that they are not stealing let's not use such a strong word. But a lot of people are not being lax with finances as much as they used to be. And I think that's a good thing. That said, it was interesting what Jess Van Rooyen, who was asked about, what are you going to do about all these bad expenditure that goes on in this municipality. And yeah. He banged on about, oh, no, you know, you people are always negative. Look at the good things. Look at the fact that, you know, clean audit increased from 13 to 54 in the last five financial years. He was, oh, you guys are negative. Well, you know, journalists write about what people do. And what people do is that they're stealing money hand over fist in these municipalities. And, you know, journalists will ask those questions. So I find it disingenuous that he actually said that, as if people shouldn't ask about the bad stuff at all.
Well, it's interesting. We were talking about this yesterday because Mubs gave us the list of which municipalities are have lost the most money, and Nelson Mandela Bay municipality was right at the top, and then there's quite a big gap. And the next one is Ekurhuleni, which is substantially smaller by, you know, sort of 4% of what, you know, the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality has lost. And it's clear that in the Nelson Mandela Bay municipality, what's happened is the ANC know they're on their way out. So they're just pillaging whatever they can. Slash and burn, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are two things going on there. That's if you will, the goalkeeper, the ANC goalkeepers. There are people trying to stop the pillaging, and there are people who are pillaging because it's quick, fill your boots, because we are about to be kicked out.
Yeah, exactly. Take what you can.
Take what you can.
Right.
It's a push and pull going on there, and you know, for me, I think this election would be great for PE, because whoever comes in knows that the people of PE have had enough, you know. They've had enough and they want responsible government. And so I think things will improve in PE, whether it's the DA, whether it's the ANC, which is really in trouble in PE, whether it's a coalition government. But I think things could be pleasant in PE in the future, but it will depend on how people will see the result of the August 3 election there. But it will be interesting. Anyway, I think we should say it's great that people are improving, but there are serious problems when irregular expenditure is 14.7 billion rand. And that's because municipalities are not following the rules. So there's work to be done and they don't follow the rules. And so my cousin makes it onto the payroll or onto the tender. And so forth. It's something that we need to we need to fix. It's not just the report by the Auditor General. It needs to be fixed.
Justice, I see that the President is planning to make an appearance at the Gauteng ANC, but he also seems to be able to just swat aside all these discussions around recall, around the Gupta probe. It seems that he's really entrenching his position. Would you carry that line?
Gwede Mantashe had a press conference this week. The ANC had a press conference post its big meeting this past weekend where it looked at candidates left for these local elections. It looked at all kinds of things. But I was interested that President Zuma came, Gwede Mantashe came out and said that the branches have come out overwhelmingly in support of President Zuma to stay on as president of the ANC. The second thing he said was that of all the people who've made allegations about state capture and about the role of the Guptas in state capture, only one person, Themba Maseko, was prepared to put his allegations in writing, and he did so. And so the ANC said, well, it's become a fruitless exercise. We're no longer following this thing up. Now, for me, there are several things going on here. One, with the branches saying President Zuma, they accept his apology and it's all good and it's time to move on. I think basically whoever in the ANC had thought President Zuma would go, the proposal put on the table, such as the Gauteng ANC saying President Zuma must reflect, that's all out the window. President Zuma is back, and he's in charge of the ANC full and center. Anyone who thinks that President Zuma is weak and needs to look at what happened in that meeting. And essentially, it was President Zuma saying, I am in charge of this thing. Don't touch me. You can't touch me. So the talk of a recall, the talk of any kind of renaissance in the ANC is basically out the window. President Zuma is in charge of that party. And many might say, how does he do it? I think it's because it is now clear for those who are against President Zuma that President Zuma is fully capable of breaking up the ANC, taking half or more than half of it out of the ANC and starting another party. And so they now have to beg him to stay so that the ANC doesn't break up. And I think what Gwede Mantashe said, that the branches said for the sake of unity in the ANC, not because he's right, not because of whatever, for the sake of unity, the ANC has to stay with President Zuma. So he's fully in charge.
So he's basically ransomed the princess, and he's threatened to cut off her head if they don't pay him the ransom.
Thank you very much.
I mean, this is old school. This is Robin Hood tactics, right?
Absolutely, Robin Hood. But he's managed to do it, and he's gotten away with it. So President Zuma is fully in charge now, and whatever discussion there is about, he should go, I think it's pretty much fruitless. It's not going to go anywhere. What I found interesting is the decision not to go ahead with an investigation of any sort into the Gupta, into the allegations of what the Gupta said. Huh. And if you think about it, what does that say to Mthembisi Jonas? He's the Deputy Minister of Finance. He held a press conference saying, these people offered me the finance minister's job. He is now, basically, the ANC says, we trust you to be running this multi-billion rand state entity, that is the finance ministry. But we don't trust you when you say people offered you this job, and we're just going to ignore what you said. What does it say to all the other people who said, we've been offered things by the Gupta family? What does it say? What does it say about the ANC that it just basically says we're going to ignore what our own people say about what has happened here? Hmm. And crucially, what does it say when your own people say we are so scared about what's going to happen to us, we're not going to put all these things in writing? So out of the seven people who had made allegations, only one said, I'll put them in writing. All the others said, you know what, I don't want to be followed up by either that family or powerful people inside the ANC, so I'm not going to write this thing down. I'll just speak to you, Gwede, and face to face. And I think that's scary.
It's terrifying.
That, you know, I can't trust my own comrades and my own leaders, so I won't write it down. I won't write it down. And that's extraordinary for the ANC. And so I think that's quite it's a significant moment in the ANC's history, that it basically abandons what is, I think, a crucial investigation. It's worth noting that in the Daily Maverick today, and Ranjan Munisamy, who's been on the show lots of times, has written a piece pointing out that it's not like the issues that have been ventilated about the state capture by the Guptas is not going on. She writes about an incident where Gwede Mantashe, Solima Faila of the SACP, Bala Gambete were at a meeting in the Northern Cape in April, where the ANC leaders there told them that, oh, you guys don't know that the election is going to be in August, on August 3. And they said, what? They said, yeah, no. The Gupta family told us that the election is going to be on August 3. So that's how we know. This was said to Gwede by ANC leaders, by one of the ANC leaders, Zamani Saw, and to Solima Paini. So this, Gwede Mantashe has clear evidence of what has happened. And nothing happened. Nothing happened. So you, me, even ANC leaders like the ANC chairperson, Pareka Bete, like the ANC Secretary General, Gwede Mantashe, they knew that the Gupta family got information way before everyone else, and they can't do anything about it. So, that's the extent of it. And the ANC saying, there's nothing we can do about it. I think it's a sad day.
Yeah, there seems to be all-round capitulation to political power and influence at the moment, and it's very, very scary. I wonder what you think of the fact that the president is going to gate crash the Gauteng ANC's party, their election manifesto launch for the province. He probably won't feel very welcome there, but I don't think he cares. He's got a very thick skin, right?
He's got a very thick skin. You'll remember what happened to him at the Mandela funeral, where he was booed in that stadium. There have been other incidents. So it will be an interesting day when he enters that stadium. Whether he'll get booed or what will happen, I don't know for sure. But I think the president is basically saying, I'm going to put my stamp on the ANC Gauteng. I'm going to show them that I am the president of the ANC.
Sure.
To be fair to him, he has been attending the provincial manifesto launches. He was in his stronghold, the Northwest, the other day. He's been going to others. But you know, if you look on the M1, there are these massive posters of Paul Mashatile. There are posters for this event tomorrow. And there's also pictures of Jacob Zuma. And the pictures of President Zuma look very unflattering, whereas the pictures of Paul Mashatile are just gorgeous. He looks energetic. He looks like a leader. You have to stop and say, what do these pictures communicate? You just have to see them, and you'll think, no, Jacob Zuma, he looks lonely in the pictures, in the posters. And Paul Mashatile looks totally, fully in charge. So, you know, the body language is not great just from that perspective.
Well, Justice, thank you very much. We will catch up with you next Thursday.
Super. I'll see you in studio next week.
Thank you very much. Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, on cliffcentral.com. And if you need to hear any of it that you might have missed, you can always download the podcast. That's what a lot of people do.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
All right, it is time for the Video Hotbox Countdown, brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. They've been satisfying your craving for over 23 years with their Italian-inspired artisanal food. With pizza, salads, and desserts freshly prepared for each order, there are no shortcuts. To enjoy a slice of this goodness, visit your nearest store, order online at colcacchio.co.za. Colcacchio Pizzeria, they are the reason you crave pizza. All right, where do we start with these videos? You want to hear about the youngest billionaires in the world? Is that going to depress you, or do you think that'll be fun?
Very depressing, so bring it on.
Oh, okay. Well, Ben doesn't mind being depressed. Let's see. This is the one video you'll find on cliffcentral.com.
The Forbes list of the world's billionaires is no longer reserved for the old and established. This year, a record 66 billionaires are under the age of 40. That's up from a mere 8 billionaires back in 2011. The planet's seven youngest members of the 10-figure club are all under the age of 30.
Oh my God.
28-year-old Wang Han of China is the seventh youngest billionaire. Han inherited shares of Shanghai-based regional airline Junyao Air from his father, and Han now holds a 27% ownership stake. The sixth and fourth youngest billionaires made their fortunes at Snapchat. CEO and co-founder Evan Spiegel is 25 and has a net worth of $2.1 billion.
Ugh, does anyone want to kill themselves right now? This guy's 25 years old. He has $2.1 billion net worth.
I just have questions around how he gets that from Snapchat, but we'll get into that after this.
All right. You think he's selling pictures of people that they don't want other people to see?
I don't know. There's something like not so above board going on here.
7-year-old co-founder Bobby Murphy is worth $1.8 billion. Both appeared on the billionaires list for the first time last year. The fifth youngest billionaire is Ludwig Theodor Braun, heir to one of the world's largest medical products manufacturers. The German billionaire holds nearly 10% of the company, giving him a net worth of $1.2 billion. Norway is home to the world's three youngest billionaires, one of whom is still a teenager. 22-year-old Gustav Magnar Witsa is the world's...
Oh, I hate him. Gustav Magnus Witsa, W-I-T-Z-O-E. Oh.
Third youngest billionaire, worth $1.1 billion. He inherited all of the equity but none of the control of his family company, Samlar, the largest farmed salmon producer in the world. But the youngest billionaires in the world are 20-year-old Katarina Andersson and her 19-year-old sister, Alexandra Andersson. The siblings inherited an 84% stake in Norwegian investment company, Ferd, which has been in the family for six generations. While the sisters are each worth $1.2 billion and have majority ownership of the company, their father retains 77% voting control. Altogether, the 66 billionaires under the age of 40 are worth $197.2 billion. That's greater than the GDP of New Zealand. Just over half of these billionaires have self-made fortunes, and less than 20% are female. See the entire list of young and billionaires on Forbes.com/billionaires.
Oh, wow. How's that, huh? So here we are working our backsides off, and there are all these billionaires under the age of 30.
I feel like I'm doing nothing.
I feel like a complete loser.
Because we don't need to. Like, the word inheritance keeps popping up. They've done jack shit. Come on.
Yeah, you know what happens, though. If you inherit a whole lot of money, you very seldom hold on to it.
One of those sisters, for this Norwegian sisters, guess what she does all day?
What?
prances around on a horse.
Is that it?
That's all she does.
Have you done the research?
Yeah, like the first thing you do. Oh, yeah. 19-year-old professional dressage competitor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She can afford to.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, of all the things, how cliched. I'm going to go dressage.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point, because once you inherit a lot of money, money makes more money for you.
Right.
So it's not like they need to put in 8-hour days to keep adding to their riches.
You know, it must be nice, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're just jealous and miserable. That's all.
Yeah, we're jealous and miserable. Yeah. All right, fine. Thanks, Mubs. Always so realistic.
Yes, with a couple of jealous people.
You do not give me a second to feel sorry for myself. My belly just reminds us very quickly that we've got to shut up and take our place on the line. All right, how about this? There's a guy who paid a speeding fine, but he used only pennies.
So
he took a gigantic bag of coins to irritate the hell out of the municipality, I suppose it must have been. So he goes to pay a speeding fine. He's got this giant bag of pennies.
One man thought he was being penny wise, but he turned out to be penny foolish. Brett Sanders of Texas, he was angry that he got a $212 fine after he challenged a speeding ticket for going just 9 miles over the speed limit. You see what he did there? He decided to pay the $212 fine in 22,000 pennies that he dumped on the clerk's counter in protest. But see, he counted wrong. He actually paid $8 more than he needed to, but he got his point across. He feels pretty good about it, so he said the town can keep the change.
Wow, what a guy. I mean, he emptied these. He didn't even have them in bags. He had two giant buckets. And he just poured them out. Half of the money fell on the floor, and there are these two women sitting behind the counter, and they just look at him.
He just made it rain with pennies.
Yeah, you've got to go and see that video. It's pretty funny. And then this is Tinder, the superhero movie. Flax, do you want to explain what this is? Before we get into it, do you want to tell everybody what this is?
So I'm still trying to figure out if this is true or not. But
if it's an actual movie.
It could potentially be an actual movie they're making called Tinder, where this dude, like, he gets this superpower where every time he swipes his hand to the left, it kills whoever the enemy is in front of him. And if he swipes it to the right, then whoever's in front of him falls in love with him.
Oh, wow. Imagine you had that power.
Along the way, he gets into sort of trouble and he needs some help from, like, Grindr, and Grindr comes to save him. And it's just all these other, like, farmers dating app comes to save him. And then this one dude, he's like the, you'll hear about it, he's like the master pin of it all.
Yeah.
And he wants to try and get money out of it.
Right. All right, let's take a look.
Could you get some more tinder for the fire?
Yeah.
So, do you like me? Give me some sort of sign.
Oh my god.
My life changed forever that day.
She died.
Drop the gun. No one gets hurt.
Not a chance.
What are you?
We got 1073 in progress. I repeat, we've got a vigilante on our hands.
They call me Tinder.
When I swipe left, people die.
We need your help. An army of bots is infiltrating the Earth.
Looking for a good time? 25 female here.
They prey on the weak and pathetic, building them up just to cut them down.
So how do we tell who's a woman and who's a bot?
That's the problem. You can't. Sometimes it helps to ask for their Snapchat or Instagram.
Huh. It's not a robot.
What?
It's a man.
My god, we've been catfished!
Well, how do I know you're not one of them?
Because I'm one of you.
Spectacular.
I'm Bumble.
I've never heard of you before.
Fairly derivative concept, just not as sleazy.
Where's the fun in that?
The robot women are not the problem, Sean. It's the human women you need to worry about.
I should have known you just like me because of my look.
That's not true. There's a ton of stuff I like about you.
Like what?
I think I was just basing your future off a couple pictures I saw.
We're over.
Oh god, what did I do? Damn you, left swipe. Think of what could have been!
You can't just throw these women away.
Have you ever tried not sleeping with a girl on the first date?
I don't think I know how.
There's a seat at the table, Sean. You need to charge for your services like the rest of us.
There's something I don't trust about that old man. Who do you think is funding all these bots?
My god, you're right. It's the creepy old man from the commercials. He's a cyborg in disguise.
Tinder is spreading like a wildfire, and he must be extinguished!
I can't get a clear shot! There's three of them, but only one of them is cute. What do I do?
Whenever you see a group of girls, it's never the cute one. It's never the cute one!
If
15 minutes are up.
Grinder, thanks. I owe you.
We could do dinner, or we could just bang. Whatever.
Flip right, Ginger! Flip right, damn it! Now's the time!
All units downtown immediately. Shoot on sight. I repeat, shoot on sight.
Flip right, Ginger!
But what if she's vegan?
Who cares?
What if she's
We're
vegan?
We're not so different, you and I.
You can't give people what they want for free! How do you expect to make any money? She could be a bartender. I don't date bartenders.
Just swipe
right. It's not doing anything.
Just give it time.
I like you.
I like you too.
Oh, this is pretty funny. All right, so you get the basic idea. It's a movie about the guy with superpowers. I mean, it's not even a real movie. You can hear it's a bullshit movie, but it's fun. It looks like a lot of fun.
You see, my theory was, why would someone waste so much money? It's so, like...
Oh, it's a cheap... Come on, it's a cheap production.
It looks so good, that.
Oh. Okay, I don't think it's for real, for what it's worth. Then there's one of those epic rap battles from history. You know, we see these every now and then. They did one the other day of Trump and Hillary, but this one is Frederick Douglass versus Thomas Jefferson.
Okay.
Right. Loved it.
Rock bottles of history. Thomas Jefferson versus Frederick Douglass. Begin.
When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for a battle to commence, then kapow, I hit him with the illness of my quill. I'm endowed with certain unalienable skills. Let me run down my resume, will ya? Set up a little place called the United States. Sound familiar? I told King George he could eat a fat dick. When it comes to declarations, I'm the first draft pick. On top of any tyrant, so kings and pirates beware. I'm so down with revolutions, I invented the swivel chair. How many volumes of my shells, it's true, but I've yet to read the three books you wrote about. You looking like a skunk in a three-piece suit. We come back from Paris to battle Pepe Le Pew. First Secretary of State, VP number two. Not to mention third president.
The fuck you do?
Frederick you Douglass.
Okay.
Stay out of bondage. The friendly motherfucker hit a diss you. Big hair, big nuts, big issue. Starting with your knuckle. There's a real decoration. Tell the slave plantation. A soft white Monticello marshmallow. Watching my people sweat while you sat playing cello. Hello, but now you're facing me, Freddie D. I never worked for your ass, but I kick it for free. Oh, your stone face on my...
So that's very good. Frederick Douglass, obviously the first real civil rights leader in America. A guy who was a slave and he became a very important political power, political influencer in America. And then of course Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States, up against each other. I love those epic rap battles.
Oh, my favorite one is still Moses versus Santa Claus, where Moses is Snoop Dogg.
Oh,
or Snoop Dogg
awesome.
Is Moses, rather.
Oh, nice. Have you seen this drop the mic thing?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Do you want to explain it to people who haven't seen it before?
It's really funny. It's for, what's his name? Flex, what's his name?
What's the guy's name, Flex?
Jimmy's, is it Jimmy? It's a late
one
night
of the
show.
Late
one
night.
Of the Jimmys.
Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, take
yeah.
your pick.
Okay. One of the Jimmys, he's the guy who does the car karaoke. He invites the celebrities and they just diss each other on a rap battle.
Jimmy Corden.
Okay. Yes.
All right, let's go. Let's take a look at this. This is David Schwimmer and Rebel Wilson. Okay.
Drop the mic. All right, let's give it up. For James, the rapping assassin, Corden! All right. And the MC, who's TV royalty,
okay.
David Schwimmer!
All right, apparently Mubs and Ben have already played this one. But that's okay. You can go and see it for yourself.
NASCAR, I'm an animal. You just voiced one in Madagascar. Oh, he's surprised. He didn't know that I could slay. What's the matter? No one told you life was gonna be this way. One thing, you're not a true MC. destroyed you. This was must-see TV. I'm sorry this battle has left you so blue, but unlike this crowd, I'll be there for you.
Nice. That's James Corden. And you want to hear? Do you want to hear quickly how David Schwimmer replies? That's nice. I like this.
Destroy me? Please, your rhyme's totally blue. I worked with a monkey, had more skills than you. I'm not worried, no one heard a word that you said. The only people watch your show are asleep or dead. You're late night, I'm prime time, you're cola, I'm fine wine. Go home, you're done, this battle is mine. Did you think I'd be scared? Walk around gingerly when everyone knows your middle name is Kimberly?
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's very good, too. You can go and see all of those videos up on cliffcentral.com on the main page, and that is the Colcacchio Pizzeria Hotbox Countdown, the video Hotbox Countdown, so you'll know what everyone's talking about this weekend. Don't forget, Colcacchio Pizzeria have been satisfying your craving for over 23 years with their Italian-inspired artisanal food with pizzas, salads, and desserts freshly prepared for each order. There are no shortcuts. To enjoy a slice of the goodness, visit your nearest store, order online at colcacchio.co.za. Colcacchio Pizzeria, they're the reason you...
Pizza.
Okay, we got Markham Dlouli and company coming in just a moment. We're going to talk to them about all the things that they've been up to, and we'll get to that in just a second. And we also got maybe a minute to squeeze in any news headlines, really. We don't have time for news, but maybe some news headlines from Mubs.
Well, the Pastoris.
The Pastori.
And this has nothing to do with Oscar Pistorius, but rather the Pistorius family. Lawyers representing the Pistorius family in an alleged cartel case have failed to have charges against their client's company dismissed.
So this is apparently Uncle Arnold.
This is right? Actually...
Even further back than that.
Yeah, further back. This is Henrik Pistorius. Henrik Pistorius & Co., which was founded by Oscar's grandfather, and eight other respondents who are facing charges of collusion appeared before the Competition Commission Tribunal on Thursday. Among the things that they're being accused of is excessive pricing, price discrimination, and price fixing. Ooh.
Yeah, I knew that Abby didn't come from nowhere.
Yes.
So, yeah, so Uncle Arnold basically is in a cartel, an agricultural cartel.
Basically, yeah. Nice. And they faced the Competition Tribunal yesterday. The lawyers for the Pistorius family company argued that the matter must be dismissed because the charges fall outside of the 7 years allowed for a prosecution. But then the commission asked for a postponement, so it's not quite over just yet.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it seems to me there are a lot of really, really rich people in this country. No one can really explain where they get their money from.
Mm.
So I would be curious to know where some of these rich people get their money. And I think we should know if they're making money off of us by things like collusion and price fixing.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know how many wealthy people in this country got their money without any kind of shenanigans happening on the side. Exactly. Is it possible to accumulate wealth without breaking a rule, a law here or there?
Sure, it must be, right? If you come up with a really great idea and you implement it properly and you help people, then people be willing to pay. But
make that money.
What's that?
It takes longer to make that money in the right way.
Yeah, but if you're going to be a sleazeball and you're going to do it in some underhanded, covert way, then obviously you're going to make the money. I don't know, you're going to hold on to it. Son of a bitch. These people are making money off of us behind the scenes, fixing prices of things. How dare they?
It's pure capitalism.
Yeah. Hey, listen. Speaking of capitalism and the economy and all the rest, I got this email from Oki.
Okay, I like the name.
Gareth and team, unemployment in South Africa is a huge problem and needs radical thinking to change the system. I suggest a new work week. This work could happen in businesses that are open 7 days a week, like shopping malls, 24/7 production plants, airport staff, garages. These businesses employ thousands of people. There will be two groups of employees, those who work Monday to Thursday and those who work Friday to Sunday. Both groups will get the same salary. The Friday to Sunday group will work one day less, but because they work over weekends, they get the same as a four-day worker. The four-day workers will have a long weekend every week, which is heaven. Weekend workers will have 4 days off every week. Workers can choose which group they want to work in, but the more senior employees will have the first option on the Monday to Thursday week. This should not cost companies too much extra money because they would have to have paid their workers 1.5 and double time on Saturdays and Sundays anyway. Okay, so some people will earn less per month because they will miss out on Saturday and Sunday overtime, but many more people will be employed, and this is better for all South Africans. Who would not want a three-day... All right, he wants you to chair if you agree, okay?
Okay.
Who would not want a three-day weekend every week?
Yay!
Right? Will that not be worth the smaller salary?
No.
You see, the problem with a smaller salary is that you're still surviving in a cuck economy.
Yeah, exactly. Will the people not be happier?
No.
Sort of.
Maybe.
No.
Mixed reviews.
People will not be overworked and they won't be tired all the time. That's true. Yay.
Yeah, okay, yay for that. Okay.
And people have time to enjoy life. But no money to pay the bills.
Mm.
Yay. Mm. Oh. Anyway, thanks, Orky. Not a bad idea. I mean, look, there could be something in it. Because you'll employ double the number of people, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a garage and you have a four-day week and then a three-day week, and you employ two different sets of people, you're basically employing two people for every job, which means you help stave off unemployment. I think it's a good plan. At least this guy's thinking out of the box, right? Good for him. I like it. I'm not saying it's foolproof, and we don't know for sure whether it will work or not, but the guy's got an idea, and I got to credit him. Congratulations to him for coming up with something. All right, Mavs, back to you.
Okay, so after more than a month since Prince died, this was back on April 21st, it has finally been revealed what the cause of death is, although this is according to a law enforcement official who has insisted on speaking on the condition of anonymity because he says that he is not authorized to tell the media, which begs the question, why are you opening your mouth and telling us this? But anyway, the cause of death has been ruled as an opiate overdose. The findings confirm suspicions that opiates played a role in the musician's death. After he died, a law enforcement official said that investigators were examining whether an overdose was to blame and whether a doctor had prescribed him drugs in the preceding weeks. At least two doctors' names have come up in the death investigation, which is being conducted. The first is Dr. Michael Todd Schulenberg, who is the family practitioner. He treated Prince twice in the weeks before his death. Then there's also Dr. Howard Kornfeld, a California addiction specialist.
Howard Kornfeld.
He was asked by Prince's representatives on April the 20th to help the singer. Kornfeld sent his son Andrew on a red-eye flight that night, and Andrew was among the people who found Prince's unresponsive body the following morning.
Right.
I mean, I don't know here. Let's talk a second about these doctors. You know, you had Dr. Conrad Murray who would inject Michael Jackson with propofol. You know, you get these doctors who, you know, sign prescriptions for their patients and then, I don't know, should they be held liable in these kinds of cases or not? Because seemingly these two doctors are part of the death investigation.
Yeah, there's a lot of these doctors who seemingly are willing to do whatever their clients want, even if their clients necessarily aren't doing safe things.
Yeah, and you know, it might even be the small things. I mean, how many times have you asked for a sick note from your doctor and you knew very well that what you were doing was wrong?
Well, you know, I suppose you got to do what your client wants.
I suppose, but there you go. Opiates is basically the cause of death for Prince.
Wow.
Yeah, they've all got to go out in some way, huh?
That's the thing with these big famous celebrities is a lot of them don't just die from normal deaths like us normal folk. It's always something dramatic or extra. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? It's a victimless crime. If you decide to kill yourself with drugs, then no one can be blamed.
But let not drugs be the evil here. Let bad choices be the one.
Yeah.
We mustn't now say drugs are bad. Drugs are always there. They live in life. How you use them is hard.
Absolutely right, Ben. What a, you know, a word of wisdom from Ben doesn't hurt on a day like today.
Yeah.
It's Friday. All right. Anything else you want to throw in before we wrap it up for this morning and go to the worst guys?
Well, just quickly that Johnny Depp's band members. This is now Alice Cooper, Joe Perry, and Matt Sorum, because apparently he's set to go on a US tour next month. But they're basically urging Johnny Depp to check himself into a rehab over the next month, because they say that he's drinking excessively again, and they're very concerned for him. Apparently, Johnny has been receiving death threats in light of the domestic violence allegations from Amber Heard. So it seems like there's a whole lot of stuff happening there. And then Flex might even more know more about this than I do, but Taylor Swift and Calvin Harris have called it quits. As have Gigi Hadid and that ex One Direction guy,
Zayn Malik.
That, there you go.
That came to a surprise to me this morning when I read that Gigi and Zayn are done. I was shocked at that. I thought maybe it had something to do with the fact she saw what's her name do it as well, Calvin Harris and
Taylor
yeah. Swift.
So expect more songs out of Taylor Swift. She's just had another relationship come to an end.
Well, as I saw on Twitter the other day, Taylor Swift's got 500 songs about ex-boyfriends, not a single one about a blowjob.
But I can,
might say something.
I can confirm that Calvin Harris and Taylor Swift are never, ever, ever getting back together.
Good for you, buddy.
Very good. All right. maybe we should play Calvin Harris just now, just to rub salt in the wound. All right. Couple of things. Let me give you the lineup for the day today, because we've got some great shows on, as we do every day on cliffcentral.com, but Friday's a special. The Gas Comedy Podcast with Dusty, Rich, and team. Comedy fans, comedians get treated to the usual sexy voices of Dusty, Farhan, and Eric with a special edition. Dave Levinson's in today. They talk stand-up comedy solutions. What can be done to make the South African industry the best in the world? Sex Talk with Jonty, Sill, and team. Oh, Sex Talk today. Sexual choice. What does it mean? Where are we making our choices from? Are we making them because of fear or because of love? Are we making these choices because of consciousness or pattern? What are we choosing? And what do these choices say about us? Always interesting. See, that's the thing about the sex shows. A lot of people think it's just filth and swingers and nudity and whores and blowjobs and all kinds of things. But actually, sometimes the sex show is the most incisive, psychologically fascinating show on Cliff Central.
Exactly, Gareth.
If not anywhere.
Last week, they had sex in the arts.
Wow, you see? They dig deep.
It's very liberating.
Totally. The Casper Radio Show is on today. Alicia Hannes Duncan and Casper will be visited by Mortimer Williams, currently performing his show, The Full Monty, at the Joburg Theatre, plus all the usual Friday antics. Then The Buzz with Jason and Jen Su and Nikita Camacho. Today, the spotlight's on South Africa's finest acting talent, Top Actor Africa winner, Jesse Suntele. And then not one, not two, but four of the stars from the hit show Uzalo. They'll find out what all the fuss is about with History Channel's remake of the Roots series. Designer Craig Jacobs will drop by to tell us about his new collection. And finally, Jen will give us front row access to all things hot and buzzing from Josie Wood to Hollywood. It's all happening right there on The Buzz. Then O'Neill and Cliff Central, rapper Tuxangana. Hip-hop artist Cole Black and female rapper Rouge will join O'Neill to start the weekend in style. It's going to be a hell of a show. It's 2 hours of live music collaborations. Nobody else anywhere else is doing this. We are the only ones, and you can only get it here with O'Neill on Cliff Central, the OCC. Then it's Kelman and Cliff Central with Aria Kelman. And what is Kelman and Cliff Central on a Friday without?
Relax, it's Flax. And we all know Rita Ora, what she does in relationships. She'll find the biggest celebrity, she'll date them, she'll break them. Yes. They'll do something spectacular.
A terrible human being, this Rita Ora.
So I've got some Hollywood inside story to cover. Who her next target is, one of the biggest celebrities in the world.
She's already zeroing in on someone?
Sure, it's going to be hectic. And this is going to break at 4:20 today on Relax, it's Flax.
Okay, so that's very good. Always exciting on Relax, it's Flax. Then there's, because Aria doesn't just do one thing in his show in the day, he's also got Gaming with Alessandro, and producer, actor, writer Lucas Bain and Stimroll ambassador Jesse Santelle will be in as well. So lots to talk about. Isn't that exciting? Very good. And that's just a snapshot of what you got coming up. When we come back, Mark Mdluli, Riabetswe Sesele, and we're going to talk to them about their show. It's called The Worst Guys, and about where they both come from, what they've both done, and all their exciting stories too. So don't miss a thing. Cliffcentral.com, just after 8 o'clock. Here's some Calvin Harris. This is what you came for,
lightning. Cliffcentral.com.